You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Tour de France in association with RAFA, the fastest closing in a world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with RAFA in 2019 as a partner EF Education First and Canyon Charam. Stage 18, today we're in Valois.
Nairo Quintana, que bravo Nairo Quintana, Nairo Quintana. Scende le Ande e qui diventa già un grande Nairo Quintana. Vien dall'altura e per gli altri è vita dura. Nairo Quintana.
Well, we were played in there by our old friend Dino Zandigu, the former rider, now crooner at the Giro d'Italia, and he actually sang that song for us. It was a couple of years ago when Daniel Freeb and I bumped into him in a restaurant on the Giro, and obviously at the time he thought Quintana was going to win the Giro. He didn't, and it's been a barren couple of years for Quintana, but he came back with a bang today, didn't he, Lionel Burney and Francois Thomazeau?
Hello.
Hello.
Evening. Good evening.
Where are we, Lionel?
Well, we're in our Alpine chalet hideaway, a kind of farmhouse chalet.
Mm-hmm. It is. Sorry if it's a bit echoey.
This is a cheesery, a fromagerie.
Goat cheese.
Yeah.
We actually saw the goats coming back to the barn because it's we came just in the middle of a storm. And apparently goats don't like storms. That's what I heard from the landlady.
No one likes storms, Francois. I've been terrified of the lightning all evening.
Mm-hmm. Lionel is a reincarnated goat.
Maybe.
you were very scared of the lightning.
I was. I wanted to be let indoors. We went up to a bit further up the mountainside to try and get dinner. And as often happens in the Alps, the restaurants was completely empty and yet completely reserved. Mm-hmm. So we've had to make do with takeaway pizzas and some supermarket beers.
It's an improvised evening, an improvised podcast.
Rustic.
And, first of three big days in the Alps, wasn't it today? Did it deliver? That's the question. Did it deliver?
I think no.
Are we any closer to knowing who's going to win this?
Absolutely not.
No. Well, give us the tale of the attack, please, Lionel.
Okay, Richard. Stage 18 from Embrun to Valois. 208 kilometres over the Col de Var, Col d'Izoard and Col de Galibier. And, well, it was a tale of two Colombians, actually, not just one. Nairo Quintana won his third Tour stage after victories at Semnoz in 2013 and Saint-Lary-Soulan last year. Quintana, who lost a minute in a crash towards the end of the Nîmes stage the other day, clawed back 5 minutes today, and he's back up to seventh overall after nudged down Landa and Valverde and convincingly leading the Movistar classification this evening. He got in the big break of the day and then, well, showed the class we know he's got but that we haven't seen a great deal of in this tour. Rode away from everyone with 7.5 kilometres of the Galibier to go. Romain Bardet came home next, a minute and 35 seconds behind. He has the considerable consolation of taking the lead in the King of the Mountains competition from Tim Wellens, who's held it, right from the beginning, really, the Epernay
Almost,
stage, I
yeah.
think. Yeah. But the other race was for the yellow jersey, and the other Colombian star was Egan Bernal of Team Ineos, who attacked the group of overall favourites and descended to finish 32 seconds ahead of the yellow jersey group and everyone else. What of the yellow jersey himself? Well, Julian Alaphilippe was suffering towards the top of the Galibier and lost the wheels, but got back to the group with a brilliant descent and, in fact, was putting the pressure on people. The way he flew past everybody and went to the front of the line was quite a spectacle. There was no real reaction to Bernal's move from Thibaut Pinot, Steven Kruiswijk or Emmanuel Buchmann, but curiously, Geraint Thomas did react near to the top of the Galibier, and that, well, the net result was that it only hampered the amount of time that his young teammate could gain. We'll discuss that in this episode. So Alaphilippe survives for another day. His lead is actually only 5 seconds smaller tonight than it was this morning, but the difference is that he now leads Bernal, who has jumped up, and he's in second place overall. Thomas is at 135. Followed by Kruiswijk, Pinot and Buchmann. And with, as you say, Rich, with one of the three Alpine stages done, we are still no nearer knowing who is going to win the Tour. But I think that will be a different matter tomorrow night, surely.
What did we have at the finish, the Lionel?
Heavy rain.
The fastest closing in a World Tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and Watch with Rafa in 2019 as a partner EF Education First and Canyon Charam.
Thank you very much indeed to our headline sponsor, Rafa. Our Rafa jackets came in handy tonight, didn't they, Lionel?
Certainly
kept
did.
Us dry and a little bit warm.
Yep. Dug it out of my suitcase, which had been in the car all day, so it's already quite warm when I put it on. So much, it kept the rain off.
Designed like that. That's a special design feature. It warms you up as well. But we were very grateful for that. Peddler de Charme, of course. We're asked for nominations today. We will present the final Peddler de Charme T-shirt of the tour over the weekend. Some strong nominations, including the yellow jersey, Julian Alaphilippe, who at the finish... when there was that heavy rain that Daniel Oss described at the end of the last part, Alaphilippe gave his yellow jersey to a young fan who was cold and wet, and I think he might have been a relation or somebody acquainted with Alaphilippe. I'm not quite sure, but he gave his yellow jersey anyway.
Well, you can't get a Peddler de Charme jersey for giving a relation a yellow jersey, sure.
That was a nice gesture. As somebody, maybe a bit cruelly on Twitter, pointed out, that might have been his last yellow jersey. Who knows? We don't know. And as I said, we're not any further forward. We spoke to some people at the start this morning, asking them for their predictions about who was going to win, and there was no consensus at all. Here's what a few people thought. Matt Stevens, who's going to win?
My heart says Thomas, but Bardet. No, not Bardet.
Bardet? He's got a lot of ground to make up.
The other one, Pinot. Monsieur Pinot. Certainly not Bardet. Maybe Bardet today, but he just looks like a husk of a man, doesn't he, Bardet, unfortunately. Still got a lot of panache, but no room moteur. But no, I think Pinot for the win. I think Alaphilippe will crack over the next couple of days, but I don't know when.
Matt White, who's going to win the tour?
Well, we'll probably have a little bit more of a clear idea after today, I think. I think the next 3 days is just going to be natural selection. I haven't got a clear...
You don't know, do you?
I don't know. I do not know. It depends if I speak with my heart or...
What does your heart say?
My heart says that Geraint Thomas is going to win. I think G can win. I think he's got the experience. He's very, very good under pressure. And I think, obviously, we've got a great team to... they've used a pretty similar template before. They know how to win the Tour de France. They're all going into uncharted territories. And the big difference which people underestimate is 3 day block in the mountains in a row, it ain't for everyone.
It could come down to Saturday, couldn't it?
It could, but it could. Let's hope it does. It'd be exciting. But I think by the time we get to Saturday, there will already be guys that will crack in the next 48 hours. But it could come down to the last climb of the day, of the race.
Who's going to win the Tour de France?
It's not a simple question. It's not a simple answer. It's a simple question, but not a simple. I mean, I don't think Alaphilippe. Otherwise, it's gonna be fuck really, really good one. I don't think so. I think somebody from Ineos or maybe Landa or Pinot, people like this. I don't think Alaphilippe.
If you have a choice, one name?
Geraint Thomas. I said already before the tour to newspapers, and
you didn't change.
Yes, no, absolutely.
So I'm with Jack Haig at the Michelin Scott Press. Who's going to win the Tour de France?
Hopefully Julian Alaphilippe, but I think he might run out of legs. And then Thibaut Pinot is looking incredible. The fitness he has is amazing. There's so many people. It's so tight at this point in the Tour de France. It's too hard to predict. You have the two Sky boys there as well. And you never know what they can do. They're both incredible.
Michael Woods, a quick question. Who's going to win the Tour de France?
I've been saying Geraint Thomas the past while. Even yesterday I was saying Geraint Thomas. But... Yeah, I think he's still going to hold on. Move up. I think Alaphilippe is starting to show just a bit of sign of fatigue. And Geraint's won the Tour already.
Charlie Regalius, who's going to win the Tour de France?
Pinot.
Philippe Mauduit, who is going to win the Tour de France?
François Tomaso.
Seriously?
Tomaso François.
Thibaut Pinot, maybe? No.
And yeah, he's one of the contenders, like many others, you know?
If he wins it, how?
We will see that on the road. Yeah.
And if he does win it, where and when?
Well, you know, we still have almost 500 kilometers ahead of us to choose the right moment.
And if he does, what would it mean for the team, for him and for France?
Well, that would be something incredible, I think. You know, 34 years without a yellow jersey in the country, that could be something amazing.
Is it really possible?
Yes, of course. This morning, it's still.
Marcus Burkhardt or a Hansgrohe?
Who do you think is going to win the Tour de France?
Bernal.
Bradley Wiggins, who's going to win the Tour de France?
My heart says G, my head says Pino.
So no real consensus at all. Marcus Burkhardt picked Bernal, and perhaps after tonight, after today's stage, Bernal, the smart money might be on Bernal, because when he attacked, he looked very, very strong. The question was, did he leave it a little bit too late? What was Geraint Thomas doing, trying to chase behind him? He jumped after him. Also, what happened to Team Ineos? A very strange performance from them. They had Dylan van Baarle in the breakaway, and he proved to be their most valuable mountain domestique today, which is surprising. He's known more as a classics rider, but Wout Poels, Michał Kwiatkowski, Jonathan Castroviejo, they all just melted away.
Mm. Well, Castroviejo, let's.
Surprisingly strong.
Yeah, he did what he could. He really, you could see that's when you see something was not going quite like the old Team Sky of old, because Castroviejo was like screaming, you know, in the radio system of Team Sky, asking for help, and that's when Dylan van Baarle actually, you know, released, you know, left the breakaway and waited for the yellow jersey group to get back on him, because Castroviejo couldn't handle it anymore. But he did the job Wout Poels should have been doing. So really a disappointing performance from Wout Poels. Maybe, I don't know, it's probably kind of, you know, elaborating without evidence what I'm going to say, but didn't we see in the stage today and at some, you know, and in the other moments of the tour, the results of, you know, all the cycling mercato already taking place, like that there's strong hints that, you know, Quintana will leave Movistar next season, and the way Movistar rode, you know, like chasing behind Quintana was up front was also very troubling, and the way Wout Poels doesn't seem to be concerned anymore about working for, you know, his leaders in Team Sky seem to suggest he might not be with Team Ineos next season. So I mean, part maybe it's only part of the problem, but obviously, you know, Team Ineos, I mean, they went up front, they set the pace like in the old days. It didn't kind of work. And obviously, Geraint Thomas' move towards the finish of the Galibier, the top of the Galibier, you know, going after his co-leader was quite, how could I put it, you know, open to discussion.
Well, it did look as if Geraint Thomas almost gave the others a target behind, you know, once he jumped away and didn't really close the gap to Bernal, who really looked like he was flying. Thomas looked like he was laboring a bit, and it gave the others behind a bit of a target to aim at.
I mean, conventional tactics are that you don't chase your teammate up the road. And after the stage, Geraint Thomas said that he asked Bernal to attack to make it hard. Now, fine. We know that the first job is to crack Julian Alaphilippe and basically throw the yellow jersey into the ring for the rest of them to fight over. But it doesn't add up. And Francois, you made the point when we were just eating our pizzas that you often see the riders and the sports directors sort of getting their stories straight after the stage and fitting the tactics retrospectively to what went on. Because if Bernal attacks towards the top of the Galibier in order to gain time, well, why would Geraint Thomas then accelerate? And then that was what forced a small reaction from Pinot, Kruijswijk, Buchmann. They all reacted to that, having not reacted to Bernal. So, I mean, it's an odd one. Yes, they can say tonight they're second and third and very well poised. And you may well say, well, Bernal has just laid a warning to everyone else that he is very strong on the climb.
The only explanation I can see, and that's probably the one that, you know, Nicolas Portal or Dave Brestwood would come up with, because they're very good at analysing the race before, but they're also very good at analysing it afterwards, is kind of a two-layered attack. Like, you know, the first, you know, when you shave and you've got two blades, the first blade catches the hair, and the second one kind of cuts it away, you know, from your face. Maybe that's what the plan was, you know, for first attack to try and see if there's a reaction, and the second to kind of bear the fatal blow. And it's true that Geraint Thomas attack, well, you know, it was probably a problem for Bernal. It made him lose time. But if the aim was to kind of, you know, see what the defenses of Pinot and Kruijswijk and you know, and Alaphilippe were, well, maybe if it's taunting like in Corrida, you know, you try it once, you try it the second time, and if the fatal blow is supposed to be maybe born tomorrow,
it doesn't make sense. The problem is that if Bernal's away, the others are not going to commit fully to the chase because they've got Geraint Thomas sitting there. If Geraint Thomas then jumps away, the others have got nothing to lose anymore, and that's when they're going to commit fully to the chase.
Well, they're not going to let two Ineos riders go up the road.
I think Bernal probably ended up with less time than he might have.
Of course.
I mean, what was noticeable this morning and all the you know, in asking riders and others who might win the Tour, nobody said Julian Alaphilippe. And I wonder if tonight, after the stage, he's still got quite a good lead. And you know, they know what they've got to do. They know they've got to drop him quite early. There are two major mountain stages still to come. And, you know, everybody's been saying the Tour will be decided in these 3 days. And today was a sort of, you know, shadow boxing in a way before we enter the sort of later rounds tomorrow and the day after. So it's a long game, isn't it? But Alaphilippe, he's still there. And the kind of the chutzpah of Alaphilippe is so impressive. He's so, you know, as when he got them back on the descent and just went slaloming through them like out my way, you know, it was like a ball running through skittles or something, wasn't he? Just didn't care. He got in their way. Or a Glasgow hard man running to the bar in a pub, you know.
Well, like, okay, you'd know about that, Richard.
Well, it does look like Begbie. It's an Edinburgh character from Trainspotting, obviously. But there's just an irresistible quality about Alaphilippe, isn't there? Both in the way that he rides and in his personality. And in the press conference afterwards, I was struck by how kind of fresh he looked. And he had that twinkle in his eye. You know, I think he's starting to believe.
Well, they've not cracked him, have they? And Team Ineos have the two-pronged attack. I was just mystified as to what their approach was today, because surely the idea would be to put one of the riders closer to Alaphilippe tonight than 1:30. I mean, really, they've gained 5 seconds as a team, really, if you look at it that way. And we know that the amount of time gained on the climb could be defended well on the descent by one rider against a group of riders. It's quite hard for a group to chase on a descent like that against one fully committed rider. And that was the situation they were in. But what Thomas did, really, was just chisel away at it over the top.
Do you think Thomas could have attacked without the team orders or disobeying the team tactics? Or because if it's not the case, then obviously if he's the one who told Bernal, you know, go ahead, attack, and then I'll go after you, then obviously he's the leader. So is it the case? But I mean, he didn't show anything since the beginning of the Tour. He didn't show any signs, you know, proving he's the leader. He was dropped on every climb so far.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's not. He looks strong, you know.
Yeah, sure.
You know, he looks like he's in decent form. But when you think about the way that he won those stages last year, he was in sparkling form there, and the sparkle is missing, that kind of zip. And I think it was missing from a few people today. I think Kruijswijk and and Pino as well didn't quite have that zip that Pino had in the Pyrenees, especially. And the one guy who did look really good was Bernal. And so with these two stages still to come, that's maybe quite an ominous sign. Mm.
But just to redress the balance and kind of go against what I'm saying a little bit, you know, we've criticised Team Sky for the kind of robotic defensive riding of getting into the jersey and then defending with, you know, masses of riders on the front. We're not seeing that at all this year, and we are seeing something completely different from them. I mean, it may be that, you know, they're experiencing a bit of a tactical awakening as well, and they don't quite know what to do with these two riders, both of whom have quite different talents. You know, Thomas has a little bit more experience. Bernal, obviously, you know, still pretty green in a way
that they did adopt the same tactics as in the past, because they led the yellow jersey group and then one of their leaders attacked and took some time. You know, that everything went perfectly all right and looked like the old Team Sky until Thomas countered. You know, that's where the problem is. Last year, remember, Chris Froome never chased behind Geraint Thomas. He could have, you know, probably or might have. He never did it. Well, was it because he didn't have the legs, or was it because you know, he decided that, well, he did what everybody does in cycling. If you have a guy up front, you don't chase behind him. Mind you, once again, Movie started chase behind Quintana, but that's what we said, you know, at the beginning of this episode. It's we're still at a loss to have any that stage didn't give any clues. I agree with you that Bernal apparently looks the guy, the informed guy in the Alps. We reached altitude. He was very warm on the roads today. He won't be tomorrow. He won't be you know, on Saturday either. Will it affect the rest? Apart from that, what did we know? What do we know now? Alaphilippe can hold. He did hold to the jersey in the Tourmalet. He did hold to the jersey in the Galibier, which is also a famous climb. Everybody knows every single meter of it. So, did we learn anything from Alaphilippe? Not much. We learned that Bernal can climb. We knew that before. We know that Stefan Kruijswijk never attacks. We knew that before. We know that Pino, well, you know, doesn't like the heat. And finally, it was a non. In terms of finding out what the solution to this story is, it was a non-stage.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
That said, PK, to remind us to tell you that this episode is sponsored by the Watt Bike Atom. Now, after speaking to Dan Bigham of the Hoob Watt Bike team, we decided that we would undertake an FTP test on the Watt Bike Atom, a functional threshold power test.
Not a Francois Thomaso power test.
Oh, no, certainly not. And well, basically, it's to see how much power you can maintain, how much power output you can maintain over a 20-minute period.
Speaking of which, have we learned yours yet?
No, we haven't, Richard. We're going to hear your FTP test first.
Okay, session two on the Watt bike. Still with the Tour of Switzerland for company. I am going to do the 20-minute test today. This is, as anybody will know who's done it, pretty hard. So a 20-minute test is used to estimate functional threshold power, FTP, usually conducted at 75 to 80% of maximum minute power, and measures improvement in sustaining a high percentage of maximal aerobic power. It's basically ride until you drop, isn't it, this one? Well, no more putting off. Here goes. Actually, I'm going to warm up a bit more first. Hold that thought. So my target's 279 watts. Doing okay, I think, with that. 100 revs a minute. And I'm 2.5 minutes in. Speak to you again in about 15. Into the last 3 minutes, almost. Oh, wishful thinking there. Oh, 3.5 minutes. Doing okay, I think. Well, I was until I picked up this microphone. Holding it steady, sort of 280 watts. I think it encourages fluid pedaling, or at least the effort to achieve that. Anyway, not long now.
Well, an FTP test is, it can be quite testing.
Challenging.
It can be challenging, but it's not ridiculously so. It's a, Well, it's designed to see what you can sustain over that 20-minute period. And in tomorrow night's episode of the Cycling Podcast, we will find out, Richard, what your FTP was. I think we will. And later on at the weekend, we'll find out what my FTP result was. And, well, there's some prizes on offer to some listeners who responded, most of them taking the mickey out of me on Twitter.
Can you get a negative FTP?
Anyway, if you would like to buy a Watt Bike Atom, and you do so by the end of July, you can get £100 worth of Sigma Sport vouchers with each one purchased. Go to wattbike.com/TCP100 and use the code TCP100. That's TCP100 at the checkout, and you will get your Sigma Sport vouchers.
Well, this morning at the start, there was still talk, wasn't there, about the disqualification of Luke Rowe and Tony Martin, and talk of possible appeals. We didn't know whether both of them were hiding on their buses, dressed, waiting to, you know, pounce out and take the start line. There was no successful appeal. Both were out the race still, and still a lot of debate. And, you know, speaking to people at the start, riders, DSs, everybody seemed to be in agreement that that it was a very, very harsh and unfair punishment. I think we expected that reaction. I don't think we necessarily agree with that verdict, but I think that, you know, I think there was justification for disqualifying them both.
Well, one point we didn't really make last night, but we actually, Bradley Wiggins and you, Richard, kind of made when we met in at the start this morning, was that, you know, you do also have to bear in mind that, you know, people are watching, aren't they? And people are influenced by what they see, and you do have to have a pretty set line when it comes to on the bike conduct, because kids who are racing or riding their bikes who don't have the same level of skill and experience and putting their hands on each other, or, you know, trying to push each other off the road, that is a consideration. I mean, that may not be why the rule is written, but it has to be of the reasons why.
I think that's absolutely right, because the fact is that you know, kids copying that sort of conduct, even putting a hand on somebody else or trying to run them off the road, it could end very, very badly indeed, because these guys are very, very skillful. And the fact that Luke Rowe was able to hold his bike up, and that Tony Martin was all able to hold his bike up in those situations, is testament to their great skill. But they are, you know, people, kids will go out and copy them. We're going to hear later in this episode from a rider who's, you know, trying to set a great example for kids, which is wonderful to hear. But that they're all doing that just in racing. And when I spoke to Matt White about it, he said he thought it was very harsh and unfair, but he said these guys got to get used to the fact they're based on reality TV, you know, and they've got to assume that the cameras are on them at all times, and they're going to get in trouble for that sort of conduct.
Well, speaking of which, something else that got caught on camera, which we saw, we saw De Koninck Quickstep team helper, whether it was an actual staff member or just a helper out on the mountain, giving Alaphilippe a good shove on the Galibier, having
been dropped.
He shoved him on the Galibier. I don't know.
Is that a euphemism?
Hands off my Galibier, everyone. shoved him on the behind on the Galibier, having given him a bottle. And there was a fine for the De Koninck Quickstep sports director, which is how the fines are meted out. But you're absolutely right. It's everything that gets picked up on camera.
Roglic got fined or docked time, did he not, at the Giro, when fans pushed him, you know, for a longer period of time, it has to be said. But it's not unknown for
remember that, you know, if we make a comparison with the Football World Cup, that before the World Cup, every time you hear that the referees have been given special instructions for the World Cup, and this is the Cycling World Cup, the Tour de France, this is the showcase event. So the rules that applies in the great events like the Tour of Catalonia or the Tour of Yorkshire, when there's, you know, less TV coverage, fewer kids watching, probably, you know, the rules are probably harsher here because it's the Tour and it's shown live almost 24 hours a day, at least live from start to finish, and that's what the kids look at. And so you have to set an example.
Richard, there was another story brewing at the team buses this morning, wasn't there?
Yes, quite an unusual incident where at least three Jumbo Visma riders, Laurens De Ploes, George Bennett and Stephen Kruijswijk, were blood tested on board their bus by the UCI. Blood testers who we later learned had tested De Koninck Quickstep very early in the morning, I think 6:30, and then visited Team Ineos and tested them. And when they went to try and test Jumbo-Visma, they'd left their hotel already. So they went to the start and did it on board the bus, which is very unusual. And lots of people said they'd never heard of that before. Lots of people suggesting that there was some sinister reason for testing them so close to the start of the stage. George Bennett was asked about it afterwards and said that it was a bit of a pain, but he was glad that that kind of testing went on. Laurens de Ploos said that it was obviously a sign that they were riding a good race. They didn't ride such a good race today, unfortunately. George Bennett crashed twice. The second one on the descent of the Glibe was reported initially as being very serious. I don't think it was. He was checked up. He seemed okay. He finished okay. Laurens de Ploos, not quite as impressive today as he was in the Pyrenees. And I got the impression that Stephen Kruijswijk was just hanging on, really. And this is kind of what we see with Kruijswijk a little bit. His limit is sort of fourth, fifth.
Yet he led them in. I mean, that group, well, he was first over the line. I mean, you're right. It's puzzling sometimes.
It's simply the famous third week effect. You know, we knew once again before, you know, as early as October when the tour course was announced that these three stages would be decisive. And it's always been the case that the third week, makes the difference. I was expecting that it was suggested by Team Ineos chiefs, whether it's Porter or Bresford or others, that the idea was to peak at the right time, and the right time is now. From what we saw from Bernal more than from Thomas, maybe I asked the question to Philippe Mauduit after the Pyrenees, the Groupama FDJ team director, asking him, don't you think Thibaut Pinot might not have peaked a little bit too early? We see sometimes the guys doing well in one of the massifs, not doing so well in the other massif, and it's always very tricky to explain and to understand why, but that's the way it is.
What about Pinot though? Because he did say afterwards he didn't feel like he had the legs to do anything today, but then of the three stages, if you're going to have a slightly off day out of the three, today was the best day to have it. What was more of a concern, or maybe it wasn't a concern, maybe it's a smart use of riders, but David Godu was off the lead group pretty early on, but again, that could have been a tactical saving him for tomorrow rather than using him on a day when, let's be absolutely blunt, the potential gains today were a lot smaller than they will be tomorrow or Saturday.
The Cycling Podcast at the 2019 Tour de France is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science and Sport for their support of the Cycling Podcast. If you go to scienceandsport.com, you can get 25% off all your Science and Sport sports nutrition products with the code. Can robotic Lionel read the code?
SISCP25.
Excellently done. Well done, Lionel. Yes, and thank you to Science and Sport. Without their help and support, we wouldn't probably be here. Since 2016, they've backed us, haven't they? I've got an announcement to make. The Cycling Podcast is doing a grand tour of its own in November. And we'll be confirming. Don't look surprised, Lionel. You've been absolutely involved in discussions about this from the start.
You're right. I've chosen some of the towns and the venues and I've okayed it all.
Over 2 weeks. So we're doing lots of events all around the country, some places we've never been before. And some of those tickets are on sale, so we'll be announcing it in phases, just like the Tour de France, doesn't it? Announces the Grand Départ venue before the other bits. Anyway, our Grand Départ will be at St. David's Hall in Cardiff on Tuesday, the 12th of November. We'll also then be doing an event in Belfast at the MAC on Friday, the 15th of November, and at the Leicester Y Theatre on Thursday, the 28th of November. We're doing lots more events as well, and we'll announce them as soon as tickets are available. But tickets for those three events in Cardiff, Belfast and Leicester are available now at thecyclingpodcast.com. If you go to live events, you can buy your tickets there for those events. Really excited about that. It'll be a rotating cast. Lionel, me, Francois, Daniel Freib, Orla Chenoui as well at some of them. So should be good fun. And a reminder too that we're doing an event in Harrogate on the Friday of the World Championships before the men's and women's road races. and you can get your tickets also at the same place, thecyclingpodcast.com live events. The live events tab is down the side of the page. Click on that, it'll take you to the right place. Nairo Quintana, discuss. Yes.
Well, I mean, he's saving Movistar's tour at the moment, isn't he? No? Stage win? Is that enough? Or does Landa need to do something in the next 2 days?
No, you forget that they lead the team classification, which is which seems to have been their main goal in the Tour de France in the last couple of years. So, yeah.
Oh dear. Well,
it was an impressive win, though.
It was very impressive.
But there's a difference in status between winning a mountain stage ahead of all the GC riders and winning a mountain stage from the early break, which Quintana did today. So, not the same achievement really as the last two stages that he's won.
It was similar in a way to last year's stage when he was also he'd also fallen out of overall contention.
Yeah. But that was a race from the gun, wasn't it?
And today was a real battle of guys who'd come here with much loftier ambitions. Romain Bardet was up there as well, and it was an impressive win, no doubt. But Movistar did a lot of work behind at one point. I thought they were setting up Landa, and people have been talking about Landa as still a threat. And the one big surprise for me today was that there was no attack from Landa at all.
Saving it for tomorrow or Saturday. I mean, again, it's all about where the bigger gains can be made, surely. With regard to Quintana, people talking about him taking back 5 minutes and suddenly he's back in the game, I just don't see that at all. Mm. I mean, for a start, he won't be allowed to go anywhere tomorrow or Saturday as a result of now being so much closer on GC. And I don't think he has the legs to do so from the front anyway.
Remember a similar stage in the Pyrenees. The Movistar are quite predictable. They did exactly the same. Quintana was up front in the break. Landa, pulled by Valverde, was at the back. I think they're playing. They're trying to play, to play the game in two fields. Like maybe the idea or original idea was to use Quintana like Dylan van Baal was used by Team Ineos as a kind of relay backup.
But maybe nobody told Quintana that.
But anyway, my impression, and it is that, you know, that there is a rift now between Quintana and Movistar. And in the same time, I think we're a bit rough on Quintana, because as you said, we were quite enthusiastic about Simon Yates winning two stages and being nowhere to be seen in the GC, and not to mention his twin brother, and at the same time, you know, we kind of criticized Quintana, who won one more Grand Tour than Simon Yates, we're rough on and tough on Quintana because of the expectations we put into him, but he showed today again, triumphing of the Galibier, that he's a great climber. He's a great classy climber, and probably, I talked to José Luis Arrieta at the Movistar team director, at the beginning of the stage, and he was telling me, my impression, and from what he said, was that he thought, you know, Landa was too far down on the GC anyway, but they would try to, you know, as he said, to erase them one by after the other, you know, meaning the other GC contenders. And he said it'll be tricky to get rid of them all. So they playing this card, and in the same time they wanted to win a stage. And when I told him, so who is the informed guy? He said he was at a loss to answer. He said, well, in the Pyrenees, we didn't see the Quintana of old, but you know, he kind of warned me, saying, don't rule him out. And so it proved to be the case today.
Well, that's about it from day one of three in the Alps, but we can't go without another exciting instalment of Outside the Team Bus. Now, this morning I was outside the team bus of Bora Hansgrohe, and we've got a double bill.
What a treat.
Well, yeah. First, we're going to hear from Marcus Burkhardt, who, a little story that captured our hearts. He met a young fan at the start of the tour, and he was so overwhelmed by the fan's gratitude when he gave him a cap, I think it was, and signed an autograph, that he wanted to track down the young fan to give an even more special prize. So I talked to him about that. And then we spoke to Daniel Oss, who was in the break yesterday, and the result didn't go his way the way he would have hoped. As you'll hear, he perhaps wasn't quite ready to talk about how he came up short yesterday.
Maybe he knew that at the finish there would be heavy rain.
Can I make a quick appeal before we listen to the outside the team bus? Could riders please now stop using young kids to have a chance to win Pedale de Charme T-shirt? Thank you.
Outside the team bus.
I'm a bit too old for a hat. But is this something you do every morning? You come out to say hello to the young fans and give them a cap?
If there's time before the start, yeah, I try to do this every morning. Yeah.
And you met a young fan earlier in the tour that you tried to track down. Can you tell me the story of what happened?
I tried to.
You tried to find a young fan?
Yeah, it was on the fourth stage in Reims on the start, and he took a photo. I gave him a cap, and then I also signed a shirt of him, and he was behind the fence, and then he was wanted to say thank you to me, and he came under the fence, lifted his arms and that I take him up, and was hugging me.
And so you wanted to find who he was to send,
yes,
him, send him a gift?
Yeah, because it is always kept in my mind, and I always saw the picture, and I was so impressed. I mean, we see a lot of little fans and make them happy. But for me, this one was really special, how he reacted to this head and the signature.
When you were that age, did you go to any professional bike races?
Now I found out yesterday that he's 13, and in this year I was also the first time at the Tour de France. Was my first and only time that I went to a Tour de France as a fan.
Yes. Can you remember where that was and when?
This was in Mulhouse. I don't know the stage anymore, but was the Mulhouse time trial. Must be around 95 or 1996 something. There was a time trial, and I was standing on the fence before the finish, so I didn't even get close to the riders like him got. So I can imagine how happy he was to get so close to us riders.
Can you tell us what you're going to send him, or is that a secret at the moment?
No, it's a signed jersey by the whole Bohan-Skrua team, and everybody gave him his number and signed the number. And I think this is going to be a nice memory for him.
Every morning we hear your music outside the bus. Who chooses the music?
Actually, I just choose some songs because other songs I really hate. I think it's a mix of the riders.
What songs do you really hate?
Kind of, I don't know, sounds like pop or shit like this.
So you want something a bit heavier, a bit of rock. We've had the Red Hot Chili Peppers this morning, bit of Blur. That's your influence, is it?
Yeah, Royal Blood, Red Hot, Queen of the Stone Age. That's good.
You don't ever feel like you want some peace and quiet before the stage starts?
No, I am a bit quiet in the breakfast or early in the morning. Now is already time to put the hammer down.
Yesterday when you came back to the bus, you looked very disappointed because of the way the stage worked out. What were you thinking after the finale yesterday?
Yeah, it was a shame because actually I had the legs and was tricky final, and I lose a chance to make a better result for sure.
Was that because you managed to get into the first split and then Trentin went away on the flat? Did that catch you by surprise a bit?
Yeah, I expect that we can be more faster on the climb.
And is it also because you have a lot of teamwork to do with Peter Sagan and Emmanuel Buchmann, and maybe not so many chances for you to get a result yourself?
Yeah, that's true.
Well, another enthralling episode of Outside the Team Bus. Who have you got in your sights tomorrow, Lionel?
Who knows? We're running out of days. We're running out of teams. It's like a game of musical chairs at the moment. A couple of teams are going to end up with nothing.
Oh,
they're
going
to just be stood in the middle with no jelly and ice cream.
There's still the Place de la Concorde.
True. Maybe you could do a triple bill in Paris.
Yeah,
who knows?
It should be easy. Before we go, not being the weather for my folding bike, my Austin Cycles Atto carbon fiber folding bike today. It hasn't seen much action today. But we're still running the competition to win this bike that I've been darting around on. It's a beautiful bike. It's worth £2,775, so a great prize. To win, sign up to our newsletter at thecyclingpodcast.com, and then when you get the newsletter, you'll see a link to click through and tell us why you should win the folding bike. I've got a few entries here. Derek Scott says, "My reasons are manifold," which is quite clever.
Very good, very good.
Not manifold, but manifold. So I'm not sure about that, but I like it. Audrey Hughes, "I would be able to ride with my club again. At 85, I need something light, a folder I can lift into a car and smart enough to be admired. I do not need a motor yet," says Audrey. Ellen Edwards says, "I have a newly diagnosed heart condition and I love cycling. Need to find a way to cycle more and a folding bike would be perfect for me. Plus my children want me to be more eco-friendly." We've got to make a decision about who wins this, and we'll do that on Sunday as we're driving up to Paris, I think. So lots of entries to consider and still time to enter as well. Before we go tonight, some thanks to friends of the podcast. The first name is Dean Potter, and I neglected last night to mention that it was Dean's suggestion to use Daniel Oss's Heavy Rain line, which features in our Kilometre Zero episodes, from the Hans Grohe bits in there, to describe the weather. So thanks very much for that, Dean, and thanks for being a friend of the podcast. Thanks also to Kenneth Hauser, Stuart Craig, Ruri O'Shea, John Noon, and Matt Stacey.
Thanks to Justin Green, Simon Pitcher, David McGinn, Jeremy Ward, and Sarah Campbell.
And a big thank you to Ross Wood, Martin Gibbs, Pete Simpson, Douglas Cornford, and Nelson Adam.
Thanks, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Francois.
Thank you very much.